De los timbales, the king of the timbales, Tito Puente, with 4x2. That is four timbales, two sticks, and of course him. It's recorded in 1957. It's from his album, Swingin' the Mambo. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, we're going to have a pretty good program today. Very, very thought-provoking. Sidney Powell's decades-long experience as a noted litigator in the U.S. Department of Justice and as a lawyer in private practice has taught her one very important thing about the American justice system. That is, justice is not for all. Powell, a prolific writer of tomes that expose and sharply attack the often oppressive nature of the relationship between the justice system and society, is appalled not only by the level and extent of the justice system's dysfunction, but also its resistance to change. In her visit today with us, we'll talk significantly about her recent book, Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Justice Department, in the Department of Justice, I'm sorry, to discuss the justice system, and we're talking about it over a number of years, but particularly also we'll be talking about the Trump administration. Thank you, Sidney Powell, for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Eutrice, for having me.
Well, your head must be spinning with the Trump administration and what has already begun to show. What do you make of it so far?
Well, as soon as I heard that Andrew Weissman had been added to Mueller's special prosecutorial task force, I felt sick at my stomach. I mean, I would like to know the truth of whatever the situation with Russia's involvement in the election is, but I have no hope of finding the truth with Mr. Weissman involved in it in any way, shape, or form. He's one of the former Enron task force prosecutors. In fact, he was deputy director and then director of the task force that engaged in all manner and means of prosecutorial misconduct, from making up crimes to making up facts, intimidating witnesses, naming over 100 people as unindicted co-conspirators simply to keep them from testifying for any defendant, hiding evidence that they knew exonerated the defendants. I mean, you name it, they did it.
It's well, you say really, this
really
without
disturbing.
Mentioning that you also had a role in Enron. Could you talk about that?
I represented, I consulted on the Arthur Anderson case from The Edge. Maureen Mahoney at Latham & Watkins was lead counsel in that case and did a brilliant job. I played a very minor role. But then I represented one of the Merrill Lynch executives in the Enron litigation. Merrill had done a small business transaction with Enron, and the government decided to make that into a crime. And it took me 6 years to find the evidence that the prosecutors, while Mr. Weissman was director of the task force and acting as a supervisor for all of that case in the courtroom every day and, you know, overseeing all of it, it took me 6 years to find evidence that they had actually yellow highlighted in recognition that it was favored the defense. It undercut every aspect of their case. It contradicted the witnesses that they put on the witness stand, and they had yellow highlighted and hidden it for 6 years, while four Merrill executives went to prison on an indictment that didn't state a criminal offense, one of whom was completely acquitted on appeal, and the Fifth Circuit reversed 12 out of the 14 counts of conviction and acquitted one of the defendants completely. They really never should have been indicted.
Well, I must say, the Trump administration, as young as it is, seems to, unless, of course, I'm leaving room for the fact that I may not know, you know, much of the history of appointing special prosecutors. But it seems to have, for the short time it's been in existence, it seems to have more than enough special prosecutor panels being put together. What do you make of that? Why does this administration need that many special prosecutors and special investigations? Do you think this is an indication of what we should expect? It's excessive?
It is excessive. I mean, look at the past 8 years. There was never a special prosecutor appointed during the Obama administration, despite the fast and furious outrage, the Hillary Clinton private server and all the emails that turned up missing, the IRS targeting conservatives, and Koskinen is still in power. I mean, you know, there was no way to get a special prosecutor appointed then. And for one to be appointed now at this stage of the Trump administration is ridiculous. Sessions didn't even need to recuse himself. There is literally, you know, this core deep state that is rebelling against having somebody in the White House that really didn't come from either party.
So what is behind all this demand for special prosecutors to look at this or to look at that? I agree, both sides have something in common, and that is Donald Trump as the target.
Yeah, I think it's just literally an effort by, in some sense, both parties or the establishment, whatever that is, to take down Donald Trump.
Does he deserve it? Because of his outlandish, unconstitutional approach to governing. I mean, he's not asking permission from anybody that he's supposed to ask permission from. He's not tolerating oversight very well. He doesn't pretty much like democracy, it seems. It seems that he likes the idea that he's in charge of everything. And whether he makes mistakes or not, basically that's the way it's going to be. So that the special prosecutor, the number of special prosecutions being asked for is really a reaction to his mode of governance than something that they suspect is gravely wrong.
No, I think it's more of it's definitely a reaction to his mode of governance, but that's not a basis for appointing a special prosecutor. The Department of Justice should be fully capable of investigating whatever needed to be investigating here. And even per Mr. Comey's testimony, it was a matter of a cyber intelligence investigation, really, that didn't target anyone in the White House. I mean, he said three times he told President Trump he wasn't under investigation. But there was no need for Sessions to recuse himself. Rod Rosenstein himself should have been able to oversee whatever investigation needed to be conducted. None of it makes any sense other than to that there is a cadre of people that simply don't want Trump to be president, and they're willing to use any manner or means to go about it. And for Mueller to have picked the people he has chosen with their ties to the Clinton Foundation and defending the production, defending against the production of Hillary's emails, is Jeannie Rae and Rhee, or however her name's pronounced, and adding Weissman, and it just causes me a lot of concern.
But this also introduces a new way of politics, does it not? Where you have a large part of the fight being legal as opposed to political in Congress, and going about it the way we are accustomed to seeing fights, being handled, where they fight it out in terms of laws, they fight it out in political moves against each other. But we are not accustomed to seeing this level of brawling, where essentially they make their strikes against each other in the form of legal moves against each other.
No, we're not accustomed to seeing this, and I certainly don't think it's a good development. I mean, Trump tapped into Americans' disgust with the political system, and that's why he was elected. He was elected by people from all over the country that are simply sped up with the entire Washington establishment. And surprise, surprise, the Washington establishment is using any manner or means it can find to fight back. I think that's really what it boils down to. It's that simple. It's Trump against the establishment, and Trump feels like he's representing the people out in the heartland of America who haven't been represented for a long time. They're fed up with the Congress and fed up with the inability to get anything done, and fed up with open borders and, feeling like we're losing the American spirit and the American way. That's what he tapped into, and that's what he's trying to do. And everybody and everything that has an invested interest in that establishment is fighting back against him any way they can. And to use the courts and the legal system to do it is even a bigger quagmire.
But it is something you have seen for the more than 30 years that you have been observing the legal system. Is it very different now? Does it have a very different feel to it now than it did when you started out?
It does have a very different feel to it now. There's so much rage across the country that I've never seen anything like this before. I mean, I can't imagine what the outcry would have been if there were a play about President Obama the way there is the Caesar play with the figure of Trump being knifed to death in it. There's this whole double standard, and the left has become so violent. It's unfathomable to me. That's not what we're about. Nobody shouldn't be engaging in violence against people of different views like this. Violence is only acceptable in self-defense or defense of a third person. And everybody's just gone berserk and lost their way.
You know, it's interesting that you in your book, Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice, for a large sector of America, this, unfortunately, is not new. This is something
right.
That they routinely have experienced in the courts, in the court system in the United States, one system working for one group, another system working for another group. You raised and you criticized, you railed against prosecutorial misconduct, for example, and judicial misconduct. This is something that in a large part of America has been normal. This is typically the case. The expectation of justice is remote for much of America.
You're right. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is to try to help people see the toll that it takes on everyone in the system when somebody is wrongfully convicted. And you're right. It's worse out in the states even than it is in the federal government. but there's a strong bipartisan movement now going across the states to reform our criminal justice system to treat drug addicts as having a medical issue as opposed to a criminal issue, and to look at what we're doing with our sentencing. I want included in that some sort of oversight, conviction integrity review units some district attorney's offices have put in place, some means to hold prosecutors accountable when they engage in intentional misconduct, which is what I really focus on in my book. People say, oh, you're saying all prosecutors are bad and prosecutors are angry with me for naming names. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but I don't know any other way to do it now, because they are individuals also, and they need to be held accountable when they violate the laws and violate their oath of office to seek justice instead of convictions. I mean, that's what prosecutors are supposed to do. And now that there's so much publicity associated with these high-profile prosecutions, prosecutors have found they can punch their tickets to seven-figure salaries in international law firms or become chief White House counsel, general counsel, deputy director of the FBI, the assistant attorney general for the criminal division of the Department of Justice, the president's counterterrorism advisor. All of those people under President Obama were former Enron Task Force prosecutors whose track record in the actual cases they tried was an appalling one. They had been reversed in whole or in part in every case they actually took to trial for some form of prosecutorial overreaching, whether it was making up crimes, making up jury instructions, all of that. And to take it to everyday Americans in the state court system, just look at the work of the Innocence Project. It's innocenceproject.org, where they're freeing somebody almost every week, at least maybe two people a week, who've served decades in prison for crimes they didn't commit because of misidentification in some cases, or in over half the cases, some form of prosecutorial misconduct. And nothing happens to those prosecutors. They just go along their merry way. Some even become state court judges or hold other political office when they intentionally withheld evidence or prosecuted somebody that shouldn't have been prosecuted.
So how far back should their accountability go in terms of possible punishment for doing the things they did?
I think it should go back as far as the punishment. I mean, as far as the event was. I don't think there should be a statute of limitations on raising a prosecutorial misconduct complaint, because it's so hard to find it. The defense lawyers don't know what they don't know. So a prosecutor with all the power and discretion that each individual prosecutor has literally holds somebody's life in their hands. And there's no system to hold them accountable for that. We can't continue to allow that to happen.
Well, I want to get to the focus of your recently published book, Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. I'm so accustomed to saying the Justice Department the Department of Justice, which is the correct name of the department. Well, of course, I understand that this is a focus for you because you spent so many years in litigation and litigating primarily against the Department of Justice and what it had done to many clients. Right now, the Department of Justice, what does it look like to you?
Well, it looks like they're definitely trying to make some improvements, certainly in enforcing the laws that are on the books and enforcing our borders and things like that. I am still concerned about the issue of prosecutorial misconduct. I don't know how much Attorney General Sessions understands the breadth and depth of it and the failure of the Office of Professional Responsibility to really oversee as it should and enforce the ethical guidelines and rules for Department of Justice lawyers. In fact, under Holder and Loretta Lynch, they were protecting a number of prosecutors who had violated the ethical rules. And in fact, I heard that the Department of Justice is even trying to change the ethical rules to make it easier for prosecutors to avoid any accountability for hiding evidence. I find that particularly disturbing. I doubt Attorney General Sessions even knows about that part of it yet. But it's something I certainly hope will come to his attention soon and that he will put a stop to that, because it's very important that prosecutors be held to the highest ethical standards, not given any slack in that regard.
But we've also seen the Department of Justice being extremely selective, even in the ways they approached cases that they investigated. With Holder, I mean, I was the only person, the only reporter allowed in this room of his office, actually, when the parents of Amadou Diallo, this is a young immigrant in the Bronx who was shot with, 19 times, bullets struck his body, and the community was so outraged because all he was trying to do was just get in his house after a long day of working. And these police officers just seized upon him, contending post facto that they thought he resembled somebody who was wanted for rape in the neighborhood. There was a great deal of protest around it nationally, and there was this meeting that was negotiated so that the parents could personally convey to Mr. Holder how important it was that this case be properly followed through. Nothing happened to the police officers. Nothing. And it later on, when he did become the U.S. Attorney General, and a similar thing, similar cases occurred under his watch, it appeared as if Holder made an extra effort not to prosecute these cases or to have these cases go a certain way. And of course, on the face of it, he presented the face of it quite the opposite was true, that he was vigorously attempting to get this matter resolved and dealt with in each instance and across the United States, the police departments across the United States. Here in today's U.S. Justice Department, we had, and the FBI and other related agencies, we seem to have a kind of collusion going on. I can't, for example, I don't know if you can, but I can't explain or understand how James Comey could definitively pronounce that there was no substance to Hillary Clinton, the charges against Hillary Clinton, or any charges against Hillary Clinton. And moreover, no reasonable prosecutor would take on the case. How did you interpret that?
The same way you did. There's no way he should have said that whatsoever in the first place. The job of the FBI is to investigate. They're not the prosecutors. There was never what I would call a real investigation of the Clinton email disaster and crimes, because they never convened a grand jury, issued subpoenas. The deals he made with her subordinates, Cheryl Mills and Heather Samuelson, whoever all of them were, I don't even remember all their names right now, but, you know, allowing them to bring in their computers and just basically handed out immunity and all kinds of non-prosecution favors like they were party favors to anybody related to her, allowed them to be present when she was interviewed, didn't interview her under oath or on the record. Just one astounding fact after the other. And then he announces no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute her. Well, I know all kinds of reasonable prosecutors who disagreed with that and disagreed with it vehemently. That is one instance where there definitely should have been a special prosecutor, because frankly, I think one of the reasons nobody did anything about it is because anyone who emailed her at Clinton email as opposed to state.gov had some indication that she was not using the secure means of communication that she should have used. So it goes really broad and really deep throughout the government. It wouldn't surprise me if Comey himself hadn't emailed her at that address. And he, of all people, should have realized that she was not using a secure server if the email address was not state.gov. It's beyond outrageous.
But it also seems as if they've closed the door on the possibility of revisiting this case, even though it has such deep and global implications.
It does. And I don't know whether the current Department of Justice is doing anything about it or not. I would certainly hope that they are, but it's not appropriate for them to comment on an investigation. That's one of the things that really bothers me about the special prosecutor Mueller and his team of henchmen now, is that they're already leaking things to the press. But that's standard operating procedure for Mr. Weissman. They tried all of the Enron cases in the press long before they even indicted anybody. And that's one of their tactics, leak after leak after leak.
So that people are constantly fighting the leaks and not the substance of the issue itself.
Exactly. And by the time the case comes to trial, the whole entirety of the public thinks the people are guilty, because all they've heard for months is what the government has leaked to the press.
Would it be fair to say that James Comey's accountability here is not finished at all with respect to the Clinton investigation?
Well, it certainly shouldn't be. If the Department of Justice does its job right, we won't know that there's an investigation of that, but it certainly shouldn't be complete, because he not only had a role in trying to end or truncate that, now he's got a role in leaking evidence himself to try to trigger the appointment of a special prosecutor who, oh, by the way, just happens to be his longtime best friend and also a friend of Rosenstein. And, I don't understand how all that happened. I really don't. It all reeks. None of it's right.
What happens? What should happen, and why isn't it happening? Why do you think that the attitude seems to be, look, everything is under control, it's going according to plan, no need to panic, we've got this, and it's fine, we will proceed as indicated, but for the moment, we've got this. And we're not going backwards. We're not looking at what happened 2, 3, 4, and 5 years ago. We are forward looking, you know, the things that they say in order to avoid accountability, full accountability in a case that just is so important to get to the bottom of.
Well, the only way we'd know the answer to that is to really get all of the Clinton emails and see who all was emailing her what at Clinton email, because I am as sure as I'm talking to you right now that there are a whole lot of people in D.C. that were emailing her at that address.
Mm-hmm. And around the world.
And around the world. Yep.
Absolutely.
And I don't know that anybody will ever really dig to the bottom of that. I certainly wish they would. Somebody needs to. For a lot of reasons. I mean, that should have been the purpose of a special prosecutor, to get to the collusion involved in that whole thing.
Speaking of special prosecutor, or continuing to speak about special prosecutors, what is your view about Robert Mueller, who has been assigned special prosecutor to look into the Trump Russia connection. Is he also compromised, or are you comfortable that he can do a decent job?
I know his credentials have been widely touted, and he certainly has a strong background in law enforcement and is a bright and hardworking man. But he was head of the FBI during a lot of the time that all of this, the worst corruption was going on in the government and the Obama administration. And he's a good friend of James Comey, who I would assume would be, excuse me, a key witness in this whole thing. Also, he's there because I'm sure Comey recommended him to Rosenstein, if Rosenstein hadn't thought of it already. I mean, the three of them are connected and have been connected for a long time. On top of that, Rosenstein is the only United States attorney that Obama kept on in his administration. Usually every United States attorney resigns immediately upon the appointment, the inauguration of a new president. And Obama kept Rosenstein on. He's been there forever. He's part of the swamp, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I really think we need term limits on anybody's work in the government, whether regardless of what office they hold, because it changes your whole perspective if all you've ever done is work for the government. It's just not healthy.
Some people are pushing, some legislators are pushing already for his resignation. This is Mueller. Either his resignation or that he be taken off the case entirely and a second special counsel be assigned. If you were to make the choice, which would it be?
I think he should definitely resign. I really don't see the need for a special prosecutor here. I don't think there ever was a need for one. I think it was concocted largely by Comey and Rosenstein and people within the Department of Justice that are holdovers from the last administration. But especially given Mueller's connection with Comey, and now that we know Comey leaked his conversations with President Trump in order to trigger the appointment of a special counsel, the whole thing has been orchestrated behind the scenes and in an improper way. The entire existence of this whole special prosecutor thing was improperly done and improperly triggered and orchestrated by Comey. I find that unfathomable.
Could you define that a little more closely so we know what the word improperly means to you?
Well, to me, it means that Comey himself decided apparently that there should be a special prosecutor. And he decided that because he felt like Trump was apparently putting some sort of pressure on him by saying he hoped that the matter would be over soon, or whatever his exact words were. So then Comey goes and leaks details. He goes home and he writes this, long memo of what he recalls of the conversation, and then leaks it through a law professor at Columbia University to give to the press. That apparently also led to conversations with Rosenstein about appointing a special counsel. And then special counsel happens to be Comey's longtime best friend, Bob Mueller, they have dinner with each other regularly. They've been personal friends for years. They work together in the FBI. That's not exactly what I would call an independent counsel. I don't see how anybody can view it as independent. I don't see how Mueller can avoid the conflict of interest. I mean, supposedly Sessions recused himself from the investigation because of his relationship with President Trump. Well, Sessions and Trump have been friends or colleagues for far less time and at less depth than Comey and Mueller. So how is it that Mueller is fit to conduct an investigation of which Comey is going to be an integral part? I don't see that.
How should, or what should the Justice Department, the Department of Justice, I just did it again, what should the Department of Justice why should it be watched closely now under the Trump administration than before in previous days? After all, that's what you're writing about, corruption and lies in the Department of Justice. Is it possible that this trend could be halted now, or they could begin to do it? And what would it take to do it?
It could be halted now. Sessions could make sure that all the prosecutors across the country know that they are to comply with the highest ethical standards in the production of information favorable to defendants as they go about prosecuting various cases. He can tell them not to stretch the law to make up crimes. One of the things that happened during the prior administration was they found it more efficient to prosecute people on the farthest edges they could find of certain laws and to what I call over-criminalize business transactions so that to accomplish their own social agenda. I mean, most people don't know it, but the prior Department of Justice had this thing going that they called Operation Choke Point. And Obama had a list of about 20 different areas of businesses that didn't meet his social agenda. And he had his Justice Department put pressure on banks to stop doing business with these particular businesses that he didn't like. I mean, that's extortion like the mob would use to threaten people to shut them down if they didn't do what they wanted. So Operation Choke Point, I think Attorney General Sessions has already ended that. I think he's already announced also that he was ending the prior DOJ practice. This is another big Obama thing. They would force companies to settle on civil and or pay criminal fines in certain matters, and then they would divert that money. They would have that money paid directly, to certain nonprofits of their choosing to further their social agenda. I mean, that was an unprecedented thing, and I know Attorney General Sessions has stopped that. So, I mean, these are things we all need to watch out for, and, you know, still one of the big things to watch out for is any means of prosecutor misconduct, whether it be hiding evidence or charging things as crimes that aren't or intimidating witnesses. All of that needs to stay under scrutiny. He could beef up his Office of Professional Responsibility and make it clear to them that prosecutors are to be punished when they do things that are wrong, because that has not happened in the past. One of the cases I talk about in License to Lie is the prosecution of former United States Senator Ted Stevens. He was the longest serving Republican in the United States Senate. He was up for reelection, and he held the 60th seat that the Democrats targeted. Mind you, this was done during the Bush administration. It was done by one of the former task force prosecutors. As soon as he got to the Department of Justice, his career skyrocketed after he helped convict Arthur Anderson, and he helped convict the Merrill Lynch executives. And then he became a special assistant to Attorney General Gonzalez, and from there went on to assist Attorney General Mukasey, and then became acting assistant attorney general in charge of the criminal division of DOJ. As soon as he got there to that position, he rushed to indict Senator Stevens and then micromanaged that prosecution. It is undisputed that that prosecution was completely corrupted by the trial lawyers who hid evidence that showed Stevens was innocent, hid evidence that contradicted their key witnesses, spirited one of their witnesses off in the dark of night because his mock cross-examination as they were prepping him for trial did not go well for them at all. And Judge Emmett Sullivan in the District of Columbia went berserk when he found out what had happened. He was absolutely irate, as he should have been. He named a special investigator, Hank Schulke, to actually investigate the conduct of the Department of Justice in that case. Schulke came out with a 500-page report that is available online at licensedtolie.com, my book website, under the sources for the book. where I've also uploaded a lot of other documents that support the book. And Schulke in that report found systematic and pervasive intentional misconduct among the prosecutors of Ted Stevens. Three of those prosecutors still work for the Department of Justice. The internal workings of the department imposed a 30-day sanction against one of them, a 14-day sanction without pay against the other one, but only one day of one of those persons' suspension was ever served. Apparently, the Department of Justice didn't follow whatever its own rules were about doing that, and I think it was the Merit Systems Protection Board or something that overturned their suspensions. So nothing happened to them whatsoever, and they're still there. I can't understand why any prosecutor who ever was found to have intentionally hid evidence is still working at the Department of Justice. If I were Attorney General, they would not be. And the civil division would just have to litigate whatever wrongful termination things there might be, because no one who intentionally hides evidence and fails to live up to the code of an assistant United States attorney or member of the Department of Justice is fit to work there.
What would you say are the most significant cases looming before the Department of Justice now?
Oh, goodness. That's a hard one. I mean, we don't even know what all they are currently investigating. Obviously, all the terrorism things are going to be very important. Their whole manner and means of continuing their fight against significant importations of drugs into the country is that those are high on the docket, and especially in the different divisions across the country that of the border states. I don't know what they have going now in the way of political corruption, but, you know, the one that's going to be in the news every day, of course, is Mueller's special prosecution. And that is untethered from the Department of Justice, so that's going to be a real danger.
I was going to follow that with your private practice. What are you seeing in private practice now defending people against whom the Department of Justice might have taken wrongful action? What do you see as the bulk of the cases coming to you now in terms of defense?
Well, I am not doing any criminal defense right now. I do far more civil, and I have in my private practice, than I've done criminal. The criminal ones I've done were obviously very big ones, but I practice with just one other lawyer, and we only take three or four cases a year. I do federal appeals and complex commercial litigation, so I'm not usually in the trenches, as you would say, with the criminal defense work. I would be misleading if I tried to speak really to that.
But what are you most proud of, your involvement as a litigator? What is your proudest moment?
Well, nothing ever meant more to me than walking into a courtroom of the United States of America and saying, "My name is Sidney Powell. I represent the United States." And getting it right, doing it right, and getting it right, and being fair and honest and ethical in the way I went about it. It just, you know, I argued more than 150 cases in the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit as a prosecutor, and I've represented the government in more than 350 cases. And many of those were some of my proudest moments. From the defense side, the hardest thing in the world is to represent somebody you know is innocent, because you are the only thing standing between them and a wrongful term of imprisonment. So for me, one of the hardest things was the few months that my client, Jim Brown, was in prison when everybody else had been released, and I was fighting tooth and nail to get the government to realize that that he was there wrongfully. And finally, one government lawyer did agree that he needed to be released immediately. That young man, Stefan Ostreicher, was one of the only people in that case who did it right at any point during that prosecution. It was just astonishing to watch that whole thing and to read the record of the prosecutorial misconduct of people who then became White House counsel, general counsel, deputy director of the FBI, and later headed the criminal division of the Department of Justice, and had previously headed the criminal division of the Department of Justice. To see people promoted that you know were willing to do anything to win, no matter how wrong it was, is extremely disheartening. So I guess another one of my proudest moments would be the publication of License to Lie. But in a sense, it was one of my most painful moments, too, because it's a book I literally prayed I would not have to write.
You said so. Why did you pray that you would never have to write a book like this?
Because the system failed. If I had been able to get the system to work, to get my client exonerated, and if even the bar associations had held Andrew Weissman accountable for his misconduct, if any part of the system had worked like it should have, I would not have had to write the book. So I wrote it out of a failure of the system to address a very important wrong, and its failure to address continued wrongs in that regard. And it made me realize that there's simply no system in process now to protect defendants who have been wrongfully convicted, or to help them, or to provide any remedy for them, or to hold prosecutors accountable who have committed such intentional misconduct.
Given your reputation when you were within the system, and since, of course, since you've left it, until now, this book, has it been received in those communities as a warning, or is it basically rebuffed and dismissed? Is it indicating, are they indicating some kind of gratitude that you have brought to light some of the systemic problems at the Department of Justice?
It's been a mix. The people named in it who are clearly the villains have tried to kill it with silence. The Obama administration engaged in some sort of affirmative means of trying to tamp it down. For example, I know that the New York Post was going to write an article about it and naming the people named in it. I fact-checked a draft of it, and then they reached out for Department of Justice for comment, and all of a sudden they're not going to write the article. So there has been, and there are other instances like that too. My own Texas Bar Association will not let me speak to the advanced criminal law course of the Texas Bar about the book, because the Texas Bar reflects badly in the book for its failure to do anything about the prosecutorial misconduct of Matthew Friedrich, who was a member of the Texas Bar and then became the acting attorney, assistant attorney general for the criminal division of DOJ, who prosecuted Senator Ted Stevens. So the Texas Bar looks bad in it. Any number of things like that. On the other hand, people, individuals out there and lawyers that I know write me almost daily thanking me for having written it. It's got 160-some five-star reviews on Amazon by people I don't know, people who have read it and who have been touched by it in one way or another and view it as a compelling story that definitely needs to be told. Senator Orrin Hatch read it and called me up 2 days after Christmas a couple of years ago and talked to me about it for 30 minutes and then held it up to Loretta Lynch in her confirmation hearing and encouraged her to read it and clean up the Department of Justice.
Did he do that, really?
That fell on deaf ears, needless to say, but it was a nice moment in time for me. And Leon Cooperman, Lee Cooperman, one of the whales, as they call him, on Wall Street, wrote about it in Business Insider and sent a letter to all his customers telling them they needed to read it. I mean, any number of people I don't know and have never met have lauded my efforts in that regard. But like I said, it's been a very mixed bag. I'm persona non grata in my own bar association, and that's just part of it. I had no idea what to expect when I wrote it. I didn't know if anybody would even read it. It was just something I absolutely had to do so I could sleep at night, because I couldn't stand what I'd seen. And I can't stand the fact that that's how anybody would pretend to represent the United States of America in a courtroom.
So in a way, it's not incorrect to say that you are a whistleblower of sorts.
Oh, definitely a whistleblower. Yes. Okay. Definitely a whistleblower.
Before we go, we only have a couple of minutes left. I just needed to ask you your thoughts about the relationship between the president and the Department of Justice. He seemed at the very beginning, he has now, of course, why did the name just go right out of my head? The
Sessions,
head of
Attorney
the Justice
General.
Department.
Yeah, yes. Attorney General Sessions.
Yes. Do you think he, in fact, had objectionable relationships with Mr. Sessions and with the department and even with Comey?
No, I don't think he did. Certainly not with Sessions. And I mean, if I had been Director Comey, I would have just listened to what he said and walked out and gone and done my job, as I knew I needed to do my job. Because, you know, Trump is only human. He's not a lawyer. He doesn't know all the ins and outs of government protocol and practices. That's not his style. And I would have just walked out and gone and done my job like I knew I needed to do my job. That's what he's done with others. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry. He didn't do that with others. In fact, he did Loretta Lynch's bidding, even though it made him sick to his stomach, to call the Clinton investigation a matter instead of an investigation. Trump didn't even try to do that. In fact, he admitted that Trump told him he wanted him to get to the bottom of it, and if somebody in his administration had done something wrong, he wanted to know about it. So,
well, that brings...
I just...
Go ahead, finish. You can finish your sentence.
I just have lost all regard for Mr. Comey through that whole process. And if you look at Mr. Comey's track record as a prosecutor, too, there was an excellent article in The Federalist that I would commend to everyone's reading about Mr. Comey's real record as a prosecutor. He was of the same ilk as the Enron Task Force prosecutors. They're all this cabal of people that watch each other's backs, one of the most incestuous groups I've ever seen. And he went about the same sort of prosecutorial misconduct and grandstanding as the others did to launch his career.
Mm-hmm. I so want to thank you for sparing so much time with us today and for enlightening us about the fact that the Department of Justice is in trouble in the way it operates and continues to operate, and we need to pay attention, because it is having inordinate impact in our daily lives and in the lives of so many people harmed directly by it. So thank you again for being with us today, and I'd love to have you back as soon as you could arrange it.
Oh, and thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you and to try to answer your very challenging questions.
Thank you.
I hope I've served the public well, and I would encourage people to follow me on Twitter at Sidney Powell, the number one, and like License to Lie on Facebook, and by all means go to Amazon and get the book.
And the reason is, of course, in every program I do, I leave room for questions. We weren't able to do it today because the information was so important to hear. So at another time, when you come back, it would be mostly questions.
I'd love to do that anytime.
I get off the hook.
You can take a break.
Exactly. Thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sydney is spelled S-I-D, by the way, S-I-D-N-E-Y, Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me via email at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.